On this week's episode, we pillage and plunder with Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Is Jack Sparrow all that matters? Does the pirate genre begin and end with this movie? And why's rum gone? Find out now. You're listening to 24 Flames Per Second. All right, everybody. Welcome to 24 Flames Per Second. It be the podcast that roasts the films we be loving the most. And as always, I'm your host, Robert Spiewak, everybody, a scabrous dog in the flesh. And welcome to our Pirates of the Caribbean Curse of the Black Pearl episode, everybody. This is to kick off our November, which, yes, an election happened last night. It's when we're recording this. Weeks before that, so we don't know what to expect or what if we live in it with a in the dark timeline in a better timeline. So I guess we'll find out by the time this episode comes out, I guess. But yeah, everybody, welcome. For November this month, we are doing kind of a different thing for the month. I was thinking about, since there's only like a couple Thanksgiving movies. This year, we kind of reached out to the pool and said, hey, what are movies that you're thankful they exist for good reasons or for bad reasons? And this is one of the ones that flowed to the top, and that's what our November schedule is going to kind of look like, is these movies that maybe we hate them, maybe we, I mean, it's the show. Maybe we hate that they exist, maybe we love that they exist. So, yeah, everybody stay tuned while we kind of do that as we go. And so, yeah, we're excited. This one's been kind of kicking around for a while in our list to get to anyways. So it's going to be fun to talk about these movie based on a theme park ride. And so, yeah, thanks for being here. That being said, the... what else? Oh, there's probably a new drink along up on our Patreon, everybody. It might probably be the one from our 24-hour horror marathon, which was Attack the Block, which is up there. Or it could be a different one that we also squeezed in there near the end of October. So, I don't know. Go and check it out. It's at patreon.com/24flamespod. Yeah, that's all the housekeeping to go over. And so... Let's get into the episode proper, starting with the Jack Sparrow to my Will Turner. Quasi Phillips.
Hi. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Jack Sparrow doesn't have a hook hand.
Okay, it's a pirate thing.
Listen, we're doing pirates, okay?
We're doing pirates. Whatever. Let me have my no eye and a hook, okay?
My no eye. how's it going?
Been a wild day, but man, can you what happened last night? Wow.
that election, am I right?
What a crazy night. Although realistically speaking, we probably won't know what happened for another few weeks, so
sure,
we'll see.
Or months or years, right?
Or whatever. But I have my wine in celebration or anguish regardless, so
okay, great. Well, did you watch the movie?
Robert?
This
oh, I want to ask you this. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm like hesitant to, knowing that this is coming out the day after the election. I was like, I don't know if I can sound like too happy on this show, right? Or not. I don't know. It's a weird feeling, like forecasting things into the future like that.
I know, but we're doing our best.
Yeah. Just so everyone knows, when you hear the first episode we recorded after the election, you'll be able to tell the difference.
Yeah. Welcome to another goddamn episode of the show. Jesus.
Don't know how much longer we're going to keep doing this for.
However much longer we have with democracy, Jesus Christ.
But thank you for asking. Yeah. Did you watch the movie this week?
I sure did. I will reserve whatever at the end, but this has been a part of the Phillips household, this film, for a very long time. It was part of my sister's blooming adult, like, she just loved Johnny Depp. And so everything. Benny and June, Edward Scissorhands, Chocolat, Pirates of the Caribbean, all the time.
that's like kind of hilarious to me, knowing your sister.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this just blossoming all of this giant up. So oh, yeah, it's especially good for me because I love Hans Zimmer. And okay. I wish we had done the second one because that's the one that I'm thankful for the most. Mm. But this is also great. And Hans Zimmer also kills it with the score. So that's really what I wanted to focus on this week, is my guy making something amazing for this movie. And it turns out he didn't want to do it. Gore Verbinski brought the idea to him. He's like, that sounds so stupid. Why are you making a movie based on a theme park ride? And it made no sense to him. And so finally, Gore brought him in, and they did like a couple of the initial ideas, pitches, and storyboarding. He's like, oh, I see what you could be doing with this. And then especially with seeing Johnny Depp perform and improvise and do all of his fantastic stuff, he clearly just found a rhythm, went in, and created, arguably for me, one great score for the entirety of the franchise. So it's completely recognizable and awarded many times over. So yeah, Hans Zimmer, for me, being one of the greatest composers of all time, creating one of the greatest scores of all time. So was something I really like to focus on. And besides that, it brought in the classic. I mean, it's the 10th highest grossing franchise of all time, apparently, billions and billions for Disney. Coming right out the gate. And I also just love it just for Johnny Depp's improvisation skills. Like, all the unique lines are improv'd. Bring Me the Horizon was improv'd. Like, are you kidding?
Wow.
One of the classic lines at the end of the film, and he just pulls that out.
I didn't know that.
It was so good. I also forgot Zoe Saldana was in it. I completely forgot. And I'm sorry. She apparently had a really bad problem with the production of the film, not the cast, but there were some problems behind the scenes that caused her to really, you know, lose love with the franchise. So it would be interesting to see if she had played more role in the other ones. But Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom, baby faced Orlando Bloom. Oh my god. Coming out with this and Legolas at the same time. So yeah. So I'm ready to hear what our roasters roaster and defender
say about it. Yeah, it is a head-to-head this week, and so yeah, we're gonna jump right on in. But that's good stuff. Thanks for bringing that info to the table, Kwesi. And so, starting with our roaster this week, we have film and political activist. You can find her on social media at Maddie Von Hoff. Maddie Von Hoff.
Hi everyone.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing good now, and I hope I am still doing good in the future. So, hi, future Maddie. It's gonna all work itself out.
Oh man, that was a wild realization I had right before we started recording. Yeah,
I was gonna like say like about get out the vote and all that, and now I'm just like,
it's too late. Got out. The vote has been out.
It's out there. The vote's been out. anyways, very good. Yeah, thank you for being here roasting tonight. And on the defense, Seattle Cinephile, you can find her on Instagram at XanderC33, Alexandra Calero.
Hello,
how's it going?
I'm hoping that I'm super happy when this comes out and not wallowing in self-pity and depression and all that fun stuff.
And rum. Right.
And rum, and yes, rum. There will be lots of rum.
Let it'll flow freely, I'm sure. Well, anyways, it's great to have you here defending. And we are going to start the same way we always start, with Movie in a Minute.
Oh, God.
They always forget. They always forget.
2.5 hours long. Let's give us the full plot synopsis of Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Spoilers and all, and we'll give you 60 seconds and a 3 count. Are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right. Well, here we go. In 3, 2, 1, go.
New governor of Jamaica is sailing to Port Royal with his daughter, and they come across a shipwreck where they find a young boy is the only survivor, Will Turner, and he has a medallion around his neck that will play an important part later. The daughter decides to hide the fact that he's got this pirate medallion because she thinks that it will get him in trouble, and she catches her first glimpse of the Black Pearl. 8 or 10 years or so later, they are adults. Will is a blacksmith's apprentice. She is set to possibly marry a captain who's becoming a commodore. She faints at his ceremony because her corset is too tight and ends up in the water, at which point we have Captain Jack Sparrow jumping into the water to save her. He gets captured because he's a pirate, and shit, I've lost my train of thought already. He gets captured. He manages to escape and has a confrontation with Will, who manages to kind of stave him off until he can be knocked out and actually arrested.
And you're out of time.
The movie's so long. The middle of Act One.
Okay. Let me see. I'm going to try
to keep... happened.
I'm going to try to keep this as simple as I was kind of able to on my notes for the rest of the plot of the movie.
Those are my notes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
Two sides, a sheet of paper covered in words on both sides.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to say this part. There's a lot of person and last piece of Aztec gold football throughout the movie. So I'm going to skip over who hands it off to who. But that's kind of, they're either chasing after Elizabeth, or they're chasing after Jack, or they're chasing after Will, or they're chasing after the piece of Aztec gold. And then there's a whole bunch of pirate shenanigans in between. But the basic thing is that the crew of the Black Pearl stole this gold once when they were pirating from Cortez's Aztec gold. And when they took it and took all the 882 gold pieces and separated them, they were all cursed to live forever. They can't taste anything. They can't feel anything. They can't die. It's a pretty shitty unlife. And so they're trying to get the gold back together so that they can be done being cursed. Problem is, all the Humies have that last piece of gold, and so they gotta go and get that. That's the main piece of conflict. There's a bunch of chasing people all over islands. People get stranded on islands. The government comes in and helps them so that they can get Elizabeth back for the governor. It all comes to a head on this Isla de Muerta, which is where the gold is, and they try to get it all in there. Oh, I forgot. Will's blood is important. Will was related. His dad was part of the crew of the Black Pearl, and so his blood's got to... Bootstrap Bill. His blood's got to get in there with the gold so that then the curse will really be over. And so they get all there. Jack is working together with Elizabeth and Will to do this in a way where they can also kill the pirates, who's led by Barbossa, who's Jeffrey Rush's, was Jack Sparrow's first mate that betrayed him. So it ends with all that happening at this head, and they kill Barbossa. Flash forward to Jack being put on the gallows for his pirate crimes and just being kind of a scallywag in general. And Will helps him escape and also is gonna profess his love for Elizabeth, and it ends with them kind of kissing on the balcony where she fell off earlier. Norrington's like, that's cool, be nice to her like you are nice to a sword, and he walks away. And Jack gets caught up with the rest of his pirate crew buddies, not the undead ones, the normal ones. And they, as Kwesi mentioned, go to that horizon, and that's the end of the movie. I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, that plot came in with a lot of duct tape, but I think we got there.
I was definitely never going to be able to do that in a minute.
That's tough.
It's very complicated. But so that is Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Everybody, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Alexandra will get your opening statements why you're here defending this movie based on a theme park ride. And everybody, so yeah, we will be right back. And we're back, everybody. Welcome back to Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, to kick off our November thankful for Movies Month. Let's see. Alexandra took one bite of an apple and movie in a minute, but didn't finish the apple. And so let's get your opening statements while you're here defending Curse of the Black Pearl.
Well, I think number one is everybody loves a good pirate movie. Or at least I love a good pirate movie. I thought it was just, it's a lot of fun. It really, it had clear lines of like who the good guys were and who the bad guys were. Even with Johnny Depp supposedly being a bad guy as a pirate, you could tell that he was not one of those like Barbossa or the way pirates are typically portrayed in movies. It's, you know, just this a lot of fun as a character. The music is great. Like Kwesi's saying, the music is that score is really impressive and it's really recognizable and a lot of fun. I love the character of Elizabeth Turner, actually. She's so much better than a lot of Disney characters tend to be, or Disney heroines, because she's portrayed as intelligent. She has agency over her life. She actually, in some of the conflict moments, is the one making the decisions on what they need to do to survive and how to get out of a situation. I'm thankful for it because it's the first Oscar nomination Johnny Depp ever got.
Wow.
Are you serious?
Serious.
That's wild. I did not realize that.
Former?
He's, yeah, first Oscar nomination ever was for this movie.
Wow. All right. Well, I mean, I think we've... Let's come back around to the plot of the movie. But Maddie, maybe we could start with characters, since we were talking about, you know, Johnny Depp, Keira Knightley, I must call him Will Turner, Orlando Bloom.
Yeah. So I mean, just talking about the characters, like obvious, like, you know, as Alexander said, like Johnny Depp got a nomination, you know, so his performance is not the one I'm concerned about. It's that his performance eclipses almost everything else in the movie. And, you know, I do agree that Elizabeth has far more agency than other movies with female heroines, but I do think it's entirely wasted on her relationship with Will, and the fact that when Johnny Depp is on the camera, you care about what's happening in the movie. And when he is not on camera, it becomes a lot more difficult to care. And when the major kind of plot, one of the bigger plots in this movie, is about Elizabeth and Will and their relationship, the movie lacks like the reason why you should essentially care about that premise. And so it's interesting to have three main characters, two of which get eclipsed by not only their co-star, but by several other minor characters in the movie as well.
You know, I can understand where that you're coming from, but I feel like if you take it in relation to other pirate movies or those kind of the genre that it is part of, that has always been the case with the hero and heroine. They've always been kind of milquetoast characters. And so it doesn't seem so out of left field for me that they are characters that are less interesting or bland or whatever compared to the side characters, because that's what this movie's about. I mean, if it's about pirates, obviously the lead guy and the lead girl are not going to be fun compared to the fun characters, the pirates. But I think that they're entertaining enough characters. They do the job well of being the male romantic lead and the female romantic lead. Do I think that they could have been better developed, you know, in terms of their personalities? Yes. But when it comes to the general idea of, well, we have this guy who's in love with this girl, she's, you know, she's presumably in love with him as well, but society won't let them be together because they're not of the same station. But clearly they care for each other, and clearly they're going to do whatever it is to be together or protect each other. I think that that gets accomplished. I mean, I'm rooting for them in the sense of the way I would root for anybody in a movie where you go, here are the characters that are in love. And you're like, well, yes, obviously you want them to be together. I don't expect them to have the same level of personality or draw or whatever as I would Johnny Depp's character, for example.
I guess You know, I'm trying to think if I've ever seen another pirate movie besides Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, I'm like the book.
I was just about to say that the genre seems sparse for being such a part of our pop culture.
The genre is sparse now. It was not in like the 30s and 40s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I'm like, I guess I saw Hook, but Hook is literally a pirate movie.
It's that Treasure Planet.
Yeah, sure. I'm trying to think of anything else I've seen. So I guess, yeah, ultimately, you know, it sounds like you can speak to the genre better than I can, but I think what was so memorable about Pirates of the Caribbean is that it got a whole lot of people watching a pirate movie who had never seen a pirate movie before, and so then judging it by its kind of own merits of, like, you know, is it a good movie, not just a good pirate movie or not just a pirate movie? Does it actually stand up by itself? And not only do I feel like, you know, like they don't lose anything by making Will and Elizabeth more compelling characters or their story more compelling. And that's kind of the question I'm struggling with. It's like, why not make it more compelling when, and I can even agree that, like, Johnny, you know, Jack Sparrow is kind of, you know, you can't have three Jack Sparrows in the movie, though the sequels have tried. but there are a lot of other things that eclipse, like, Will and Elizabeth, like the two, like, pirate guys who are like the Bert and Ernie of the movie, like, eclipse Will and Elizabeth. Like, her dad fighting the skeleton hand, like, is more interesting. Like, the monkey going to get the medallion was, like, more interesting. And so I think, you know, for me, I have to ask myself, why not make them more compelling? And because they did it, I'm going, okay, well, you have a good portion of this movie that isn't as good or compelling as another portion of the movie. And then that is the fault of, you know, the writers or the director for making it that way.
Well, I do wonder, I mean, I will say that I do wonder how much got shifted in the process of making the movie as Johnny Depp was kind of allowed to do whatever he wanted to do. But again, I think that I think they're fine characters. I think Will and Elizabeth serve the purpose of being the, you know, the romantic leads and the people that the plot kind of revolves around, in the sense of, like, you know, them needing his blood to lift the curse, Elizabeth pretending to be a Turner as a way to protect herself because she's the governor's daughter. But also, ultimately, it does protect Will for a while, and that's what she cares about doing. I just think, like I said, you know, for Disney, I honestly, with Disney movies, live action or animated, I don't expect much out of the characters. I expect them to fill a very specific kind of cliched role. And, you know, yeah, that can be annoying or disappointing, but I think with this movie, especially because it's a pirate movie, but also it's just an action adventure movie, you know, again, I don't expect much out of the people who are just supposed to be there as the ones of, you know, these are the two that are in love, and the ultimate thing that we want for them is to be together.
Could the movie, though, then have been a good half an hour shorter? Like, I think that you're going to add this in, and if it's not going to be all that great, like, the, you know, you're going to add in, like, a lot of these moments, could they not have cut that out? And so I guess, you know, as the roaster, I mean, that's something to roast. It's that, you know, they left in a lot of stuff that would have made it a stronger movie had they just said, this isn't that compelling, and it is a Disney movie. It's obviously based off a theme park ride. Why don't we just take it out?
I cannot argue the point that it should be the length that it is. it is, I would agree, it needs some more editing. But I think, you know, not to deviate away from having to be the defender, I think that does fall on the writers of not knowing how to move the medallion football through the plot well. But I do wonder, you know, it's a game I play all the time of when I'm watching something really long, okay, what scenes do you lose? How do you, you know, take 30 minutes off this movie or more without losing the idea of, you know, we have this medallion, it has to be returned to this chest for the bad guys to be able to, you know, be mortal again. And the parts, you know, all the moving chess pieces of how do we navigate the medallion to this cave, Elizabeth and Will to this cave for the final showdown, Jack to the cave for the final showdown. Also, whose side is Jack on, you know, through all of this until we get to the cave. I do wish it was shorter, but I don't know what you can lose entirely without totally decimating who some of those characters are that do play some part at some point in the film.
Probably some more monkey jokes. You can probably cut a few of those out.
So here's my argument. I think you could have lost everything past the first time they went to the cave. That everything to, yeah, I know. I see the faces. No one else can see faces. Like, hear me out. That maybe, and maybe you would need to take bits and pieces from the second half of the movie and put them in before and just kind of like change the order of things around. But the movie only makes sense to me until the first cave, that they think that Elizabeth is, Will, you know, like Bootstrap Bill's daughter. They take her to the cave. Jack Sparrow has a great compelling reason to follow them. Will has a great compelling reason. All of it makes a whole lot of sense until Elizabeth is like found by Will, right? They're all like celebrating. They're like people again. And like Elizabeth grabs the medallion. In that moment, the movie stops making any sort of sense. Like, the pirates are infinitely more dangerous without the medallion than they are. Like, so to say that the movie is trying to get the medallion to the cave, the only thing that's stopping the medallion to get to the cave is that Will and Elizabeth suddenly decide that instead of going home and being together, they need to take the medallion with them. Even though what would make the movie a whole lot easier is chucking it into the ocean, them going to get it, becoming human, and then killing them. Like, I don't understand why the movie had to go to the cave again when they probably could have just had this whole scene going up to the cave to like rescue Elizabeth or rescue Will or whoever you're trying to like rescue. Like, maybe they got her off the ship and then it's Will gets captured and then now they're like falling from the cave and like, the cave is such a great set piece. The fact that they used it the second time they're in there, it loses a lot of its kind of like magic. Honestly, the theme park magic, right? That like when you're a kid, you go into the treasure room, like off the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, and it's like magical looking. But ultimately, it just doesn't make any sense why they don't want the pirates to be human. Like, why would they stop them from doing that? Because like, had they not gone back to the cave, the pirates would have just come back to Port Royal and done the exact same thing they did at the start of the movie, which was trounce over the town. Like, they're immune. It doesn't make any sense why you wouldn't just let them become human. What do they have to benefit from that? So that is my thesis. The movie could have ended in the first time they went to the cave. They either left the medallion there or Jack Sparrow and Barbossa did the whole sword fight at the first time they were in the cave. It doesn't make sense why they didn't just do the little like medallion, teaming up, taking out the pirates, doing the last minute, you know, turning him human, shooting him. Like, the second part of the movie should not have happened.
Wow. Okay. I'm not sure what to say.
I know, it's a lot. I'm writing to Disney tomorrow. We're going to reboot the franchise.
Reboot the whole franchise.
2023, a remake of Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, so the thing is, I'm wondering, did the characters know at that point exactly what would happen when Will's blood was on the medallion? Had that been established at that point? We knew they needed blood, but we the audience, were we told at that point why the blood needed to be on the medallion so that they could be human again? Or was it that we were just told that they needed the blood of Bootstrap Bill's descendant?
It's told because Barbossa tells Elizabeth that like they can't eat, they can't, they're like less than human, they just like want, you know, like, and she thinks okay, that she's gonna die. So like, I think what's so compelling about the start is that you think Elizabeth is gonna be sacrificed, right? And that's why you're going after her. So like, even though them being human is an advantage, you obviously don't want to sacrifice like the heroine, right, over the altar. But right, then it loses, once she's rescued, once they're all rescued, just kill them. They know where the cave is, right? Like, they could just put the metal in, even leave them there, right? And then go tell the Commodore and be like, hey, like, you want to kill some pirates? Like, do it too, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, honestly, you throw that coin like 15 feet into a pile of gold, it's lost forever. There's no way they're finding that in the cave.
They either like, but like, that's the thing. Like, what if they never find it, then they're just a huge problem, right? They will just pillage every town they come into contact with, they will never be able to be overcome. Chuck it in the water. Like, the water calls them. Let them find it. Let them become human. Let them get, like, super drunk. And then, like, go blow them up.
Well, okay. I'm trying to figure out how to defend this decision. other than we just want a long movie. I think because you want to have that, or Disney wants to have that, that kind of back and forth final showdown, but there's stuff that would get lost, kind of backstory of Captain Jack on the island, for example, how he gets off the island, you know, the story he's told everybody versus the fact that he hung out on a beach in the Caribbean with rum for 3 days, that would not get included if you kind of shift everything and the cave is only visited once. And I
it's an extreme,
very good point.
Extreme position.
This is, I don't know. Disney needs the Maddie Von Hoff cut.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if they released that cut to everyone's like, who the fuck is this? Like,
I don't know. I think it's still about ultimately having a kind of an adventure movie, and, you know, adventure movies need a little bit more, because the other thing is, I think, so if we shift everything, there's no second cave visit, you have this kind of pursuit of Elizabeth and or Will and the medallion to the cave, and the one visit to the cave is the final thing. I feel like much of the middle of the movie would be kind of boring, because it would just be a bunch of guys on a boat following another bunch of guys on a boat, and nothing happens. So maybe you don't need two cave visits, but by having these moments where it's like, okay, confrontation, is this where they win? No, wait, okay, something else has happened. It's beats in a story that wouldn't be there if you have just one final showdown.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it would take a lot of rewriting, kind of the in-between, like, could Elizabeth have been like left at an island, or could there have been like that whole boat scene they had, like, could that pirate ship fight have been earlier in the movie, right? Where, so it's not just a boat chasing another boat, it's a boat chasing another boat and then having a boat fight and then chasing like the boat again, which is like, you know, most chase movies, heist movies, you know. So like, yeah, ultimately, you know, I like the mechanic starts to fall apart of the gold medallion when it is beneficial for the protagonists to let them have it. And I think that's maybe what makes Pirates of the Caribbean so interesting, is like, while it is a lot of fun, the fun kind of covers that, because like, in what movie does it make sense? Like, if Pirates of the Caribbean is kind of a heist movie, which in some ways it kind of is, with some similar mechanics, like, no other movie does it make sense for the enemy to actually get a hold of the object of their desire. Yet in Pirates of the Caribbean, it starts to make a lot of sense to just let them have it. It's a little bit like Indiana Jones, where it's kind of like, sure, like, go find the Covenant. And then, you know, but they didn't know that. And I think that's what it worked about Indiana Jones, was like, they didn't know what was going to happen, versus in this, it's pretty clear. And I guess maybe the argument is that Jack Sparrow had this all orchestrated in his head to get the ship back, but I do believe that Robert but I do believe it's more like he saw an opportunity there to get a ship back. But I argue the same opportunity would have existed if they were human and they just, you know, had an easier time killing him.
Yes, probably the same would have. The same opportunity for the ship. But so going back to the boat fight, for example, part of what makes the boat fight work for me, or what I like about it so much, is the fact that Elizabeth is the one that takes charge of it. You know, she's on a boat with people who have, you know, years more experience doing that kind of thing than she does. So if you shift everything, if you change the storyline around, or the story points around, so that the cave visit's the only one, how is she on the boat? At what point does she get to prove that she's not just this helpless, you know, girl in a corset that needs to be rescued, like so many other Disney female characters? I think having the story set up the way it does allows for the development of Elizabeth as a strong female character that wouldn't be there. And she would be just another boring Disney heroine who just could have easily been left sitting in a tower waiting for some guy to defeat a dragon. It's like, what's the difference?
In the time that we have left, since we're close to unmasking, not unmasking yet, but I know we wanted to talk about the legacy of this movie. You know, movie based on a theme park ride, added to the theme park ride. There's four more movies after this. Maddie, do you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I think the lasting impact is that this movie arguably could be a fluke. It didn't set up enough to have as many sequels as it did. And I feel like the message that the producers took from this movie was not that they should make additional compelling pirate movies, was that they should put Johnny Depp on camera for as much as they can, which at, you know, two to three hours was another like 10 hours worth of content that really didn't need to exist. And so I think that, you know, I'd like to be able to view this movie as a deliberate work of creating a good pirate movie. But ultimately, if you see it against the movies that came after it, one of which was okay, three of which were really not, it starts to lose like its appeal, essentially.
I would agree that there did not need to be any additional pirate movies after this, but it's, you know, corporate movie making at its finest. I mean, that's, you know, Disney was never going to walk away from something that made movie, that made money. And so, I mean, for me, the lasting legacy of this is not some shitty follow-up movies, but the fact that people looked at Johnny Depp as somebody who could carry a movie, and, you know, the fact that he's fucking talented and deserved a lot more credit as an actor than he was getting up until that point. So I think, it's very corporate, you know, the decision to keep going with it. You can tell because, as like Maddie was saying, the movies got steadily worse as it was like, we need to just do more stuff, throw more stuff at the screen, put more shit on there, let Johnny Depp do whatever the fuck he feels like, and we'll make money. I mean, it's just, and I feel like that's how Disney makes half of its movies anyway. It's just like, throw a bunch of shit on the screen, people will come see it.
It is curious, though, to evaluate Black Pearl as like, this movie both started and ended the modern pirate genre. Like, that is what happened. Like, it created it. Like, it like was like a flash in the pan, right? Like, it extinguished its own light. And so I think, yeah, like, looking back at it, it's a shame that they couldn't take some of the better elements of this movie and they actually magnified the worst elements of this movie to create, you know, a series of movies that ultimately did not hold up.
That's an interesting point, Maddie. Do you think that there's, and I posit this question to both of you. So this, the fact that Pirates has created this new, this, that flash in the pan, does it, did it expand the possibility for that story, different types of stories to be told in the pirate era? Or is it kind of like there's everything else is going to be compared to this. So don't bother anymore.
I was going to say, I mean, the thing is, pirate movies especially, I think, are just, they're kind of pigeonholed by the nature of the type of story they are. So, like, action-adventure movies can be made of any kind, of any story, whatever. Pirate movies are very specific. And so while it may have expanded the possibility of more pirate movies, I don't know that it really lent itself to a resurgence of the genre, simply because, honestly, once you've seen any pirate movie, you've seen all pirate movies, because it's always about the guy's got to go get the treasure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, the pirate genre is a limited one. And unfortunately, five pirate movies almost touched on every joke, theme, monster that has already been like established. And so I think could there be another pirate movie that wasn't compared to this? Yeah, absolutely. Because I think you could take elements of other genres, like I mean, what about Greek mythology, right? Like, I mean, there's a lot of elements of seafaring within Greek mythology, a lot of pretty sweet monsters too that can be pulled out. And essentially Greek mythology is a quest. In a lot of ways, Greek mythology is very similar to the pirate genre. There's treasure, monsters, quests, heroes. And so I think that you definitely could make another pirate movie. And I would be interested to see if any come out that are able to put their own spin on it and not be, and not kind of rely on the mechanic of like, we need like kind of a drunk pirate to anchor like kind of less compelling characters to this movie. So I think you could, borrowing from other genres. And I think that was maybe a weakness of Pirates of the Caribbean, was that it doesn't borrow from any other genre. And it propped up a character who was kind of so in, like, so the movie that I hope that other franchises don't do the same.
Right. And I think that it's also feels like the genre has gone to space a little bit. Like Serenity, Firefly being like a space pirate feel. Guardians of the Galaxy, I'll even throw that in there as a possibility. That type of like space piracy being like a group of scallywags. That world, it seems like the pirates have gone to space.
Well, we've about reached time to unmask, so let's talk about how we really feel. Alexandra, would you like to go first?
I'm a big fan of the movie. I like adventure movies. I like pirate movies. I like Johnny Depp. I mean, it is way too long. It took me so much longer than 2.5 hours to watch the movie today because I kept stopping it. So, you know, Maddie, you brought up a lot of good points about the length and the pacing of it and the way the movie's put together. But ultimately, I enjoy it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's got some great jokes that I still say with my friends, you know, why is the rum gone? You know, those kind of things that pop up and that become kind of cultural touchstones. And I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Maddie.
I mean, who hates Pirates of the Caribbean? Nobody. I realized today that I think I suggested Pirates of the Caribbean as you, when you had asked Robert for movies you were thankful for, I suggested Pirates of the Caribbean. And then I was looking at it and I was like, how did I get on the roasting side if I suggested this is a movie I'm thankful for? So I was pretty anxious today. And so I'm glad that you feel like I made good points, because I was like, dang, I have to roast a movie I'm thankful for. I agree with what I said? Yeah. Do I care? No. Like, I love this movie.
Kwesi.
Yeah, and you did a great job, both of you guys. On rewatch, I think that, like, it's more nostalgic for me than I think that I remember. And I also remember being real spooked by it the first time I watched it when I was a kid by the ghosts or by the zombie pirates. I honestly like the second one better. I know it's worse, but I like it better. just because Bill Nye as David Jones is like my favorite villain ever. He's incredible. It was so good in terms of performance. But this movie, great, fun, super great, good times. Wasn't it like the last movie on VHS too? I forget, but because I remember we had it.
I mean, was Lord of the Rings on VHS? Because that was the same.
They were around the same time, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember watching
it, right?
Yeah. I remember getting this with my sister and watching it. I never watched it in theaters. I watched it on the VHS for the first time, and it was so much fun to watch it and like go through everything with and like watch it. And so like the next ones came out, we went to the theaters every time. But this movie, I think that I think Maddie had a great point that it kind of blasted piracy back into like the mainstream for a while. Pirates are in this year, and all of a sudden they like, and then it just went away for a hot, it was weird. So I didn't even realize that, but that's a really great point. It's always a fun to watch movie. Like, I'm never not down.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it. I think it's a really great, like, well-balanced adventure movie. And I just, like, rewatched the original trilogy not that long ago as part of, like, quarantine. I was doing this rewatch movie series thing. And I remember the, like, Will Turner, Elizabeth Swann romance being more annoying than it actually is. I actually think it provides some, like, really good humor and fun, not fun, but humor to the movie. And yeah, the characters are great. I love Barbossa. And the spooks are good for kids. And I don't know. I think it's fun and pretty great. I don't know. I'm a big fan. I don't have any issues.
Like when Alexander had said, like, oh, yeah, like he was like Jack Sparrow's first mate. And like that, like, occurred to me. I was like, how did he ever end up with Jack Sparrow's first mate? Right? Like, he has his own ship, right? Like, he is so compelling.
No, this was best, arguably best movie based on a theme park ride.
But yeah, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode, our Pirates of the Caribbean Curse of the Black Pearl episode. It's a mouthful to say every time. And so if you got thoughts about Pirates of the Caribbean Curse of the Black Pearl, you can email us at 24flamespod@gmail.com. You can find us on social media at 24flamespod. Wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's, there's so many out there. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, to name a few that we use the most. Head over there, leave a rating or review, subscribe so more people can find the show. We can use those reviews. We can make the show better. It's this, a rising tide raises all ships. Haha. Yeah, everybody, that's going to do it for this one. This episode of 24 Flames Per Second was produced and hosted by me, Robert Spiewak. Co-host this week was Kwesi Phillips. And it was a head-to-head this week. The panels, the roaster was Maddie Vonhoff, defense, Alexander Calero. Our show music is composed and produced and performed by Rob Joins and Will Paulson. And our network and co-op, Party Fish Media, is produced by Kwesi Phillips, Will Paulson, and myself. Everybody, we are going to be back next week as we continue the theme of thankfulness. And next week, we are talking about Pixar's Brave, which is another one that came up as we're talking about movies that we're thankful for. And so we're really excited to jump into that one. We hope you come back for it next week, everybody. Yeah, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. It was great to get together again for another one. And thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next week for Brave, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.